Well, hello. This is the Roanoke Collaboration Project, and we are gathered together for the last 5 years to be able to discuss most anything that has been in the public that has both pros and cons, but each of us has had a voice and be able to be safe in our space to be able to share that. And we hope that this will be something we can model throughout the Roanoke Valley.
And then I'm Dana Ackley. I'm the president of EQ Leader Consulting Group.
I'm Cynthia Lawrence. I'm head of Workforce Development at Carilion Clinic, and I also lead a regional group called the Blue Ridge Partnership for Health Science Careers.
This is Jay Foster. I'm with the Praxis Way.
William Fralin. I'm CEO of Retirement Unlimited, Inc. here in Roanoke and a former member of the House of Delegates.
Catherine Elam, a retired executive director of a nonprofit and also work with the election community.
Joyce Waugh, retired from the Roanoke Regional Chamber and the head of Joyce Waugh Consulting.
Wayne Strickland, and I'm retired and was the former executive director of the Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission.
Governor-elect Abigail Spanberger was asked a handful of questions by Politico's Bracton Booker, including if she would work with President Donald Trump when she takes office next month.
I mean, he's now started talking about affordability, if he has, you know, a real clear vision of what it is. I mean, recently he called it a hoax, but if he wants to actually get like clear-eyed on the fact that it's not a hoax and it is a real challenge for people.
Well,
hope springs eternal. There's got to be some place we can work together.
Trump, meanwhile, spoke at a rally in Pennsylvania just hours after Spanberger's interview. There, he offered his own take on the affordability message that has seen Democrats flip seats since he took office.
I say it, you know, and I said it the other day, and a lot of people misinterpreted it. They say, oh, he doesn't realize prices are high. Prices are coming down very substantially. But they have a new word. You know, they always have a hoax. The new word is affordability.
Back in Richmond, Spanberger also addressed future redistricting in Virginia. She said Democrats could win the state's first and second congressional districts without map redraws. And when asked directly if she thought a redraw was, quote, the way to go.
No, but well, so but as it relates to what Don or what the speaker talked about and what's happening in Texas and North Carolina, I do think it's important that Virginia leave open the option.
Spanberger said the people will get to decide the redistricting issue via referendum. She's focused on affordability. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Well, that's great, guys. And so let's us focus on affordability, too. And this is William Fralin. And one of the issues that strikes me in that story, and I'll throw it out to you all, is affordability of what? We've got housing affordability, which is an issue. We've got consumer prices, which are an issue. We've got all kinds of different prices for different things. But what struck you all as the motivating factor in that story? Jay?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts involved, to your point. So one way to cut into this, I think, this topic is to get clear about what the terms are. And in this case, they were talking about the inflation rate. And that's real clear data that's backed up that we can quantify what we're talking about. And in that regard, the inflation rate's not getting any better. It's starting to get worse. And that's what people are concerned about. So I would call that affordability. Consumer prices.
Of course, the inflation rate is made up of core inflation and other inflation. The core inflation being energy prices, things like that.
Yeah.
And of course, we've seen in grocery prices, we've definitely seen increase, whether that's related to monetary policy or tariffs. I'm not sure, but Cynthia?
Yeah, I think there's another factor here that comes in with regard to this term, and that is the weakness in the employment sector. So I think that the fact that we are seeing some weakness in job growth is contributing to the overall number that people are calling affordability.
So it's the back end of affordability is whether you have the money in the first place.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Joyce, you look troubled.
Well, you know, there are several factors here, of course. And it seems like also there are some, as always, there are some trust issues about, you know, do we think things are going to get better? And do we think that we're going to be able to afford, you know, whatever it is, you know, food on the table, you know, get the kids to school or college or whatever that is? You know, I think that just plays a big part. It's sort of like, you know, consumer confidence, if you will.
Well, trust in terms of the numbers, whether the numbers are accurate or, you know, there's often a disconnect between the numbers and how you feel. I remember Ronald Reagan had a quote. He said, you know, when you lose your job, when your neighbor loses their job, it's a recession. When you lose your job, it's a depression.
Well,
so,
I think,
right. Go ahead.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's, you know, and in grad school, it was like liars figure and figures lie. You know, I mean, where do you begin with that? But I think it's like wanting to know that there are factors that you can count on, and whether that's prices, which we're basically calling affordability, or something else. You know, can you trust the players that are involved that are basically we feel are affecting lives, in our lives.
Right. I would say too that affordability, one of the big things that's hanging over families, not only are they looking at the cost of groceries, but what about our health care? I mean, that's a whole nother avenue, but people are worried and they're now starting to think of other ways and what they're going to have to do to cut away from maybe what they would do every day. If they're going to actually, as the news has projected, we're going to see, sometimes double and triple rates for having insurance coverage. So these are things that are very real. When you look at our community, it can get sick because of the fact that they can't have the insurance, even if you had the food on the table. So you're making affordability in a family right now is certainly a real term, I would say, as we look at how we're going to go day to day.
Right. Having to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. Right, Wayne?
The issue of affordability is really problematic, because that your dollar's not going as far, perhaps, but what do you do about it? I mean, mm-hmm. You talk about taking care of affordability. Does that mean you're going to, as the suggestion was of the new mayor in New York, take over grocery stores mm-hmm. and run grocery stores? How do you handle the issue of reducing the cost without injecting government into the private sector?
Right. So what I hear you saying, Wayne, is what are the governmental policy solutions to affordability? There are economic forces that are at play that are beyond even the reach of the government in some instances. Catherine's talking about healthcare. Certainly the government is involved with healthcare mm-hmm. policy. Certainly the government's involved with housing policy. In terms of consumer goods pricing, it's much more difficult, I would think, for the government to have a role in that. Jay, you wanted to jump in?
Well, it's just interesting. This conversation is what Wayne, you were just talking about, was coming at it from the solution side, and how do you solve a problem once you can clearly define it? But then the other piece of this is how do you actually experience this problem? And we've talked about that many times in this group. People talk about Roanoke, especially Roanoke City, and Bill Lee's not here today, but he points out there's really four different communities in Roanoke, not one, and they're very different. So affordability in South Roanoke is a different concept than affordability in Northwest Roanoke, right? And so it's interesting, how do people deal with that level of a problem, and who do they trust is a big question.
So we have a sort of a collective response politically, and then we have an individual response. I think Catherine's pointing out is people are having to sit around the proverbial kitchen table and say, what are we going to buy this month mm-hmm. or what are we going to cut out this month in response to policy changes, one of which is the Obamacare subsidies that are being debated right now that are going to go away. I think clearly will have an impact on a lot of families. I've seen debate about how much and who's really getting the impact and who's not and all that. I do think sometimes it gets lost in the conversation that those subsidies were temporary increases in response to COVID. And COVID's over, so now we're going back to the original rates, and people are shocked at how much the original rates have evolved into with medical inflation. Right. So, Cynthia, you want to say?
Sure. I'd like to tag on a little bit about the condition of the healthcare industry as a result of COVID and what the impacts were. There was a record number of retirements and departures in the healthcare workforce as a result of the pressures brought on by COVID. And hospitals and care providing organizations were pressured by extra costs with regard to personnel and materials and everything that they had to garner to fight the situation that was going on with the increased patient load. So the industry is still recovering from COVID. Now, that doesn't actually translate directly into the government policies that are perhaps going to affect the increased insurance coverage pricing or the subsidies that were affected, but certainly the healthcare industry has a real concern about those costs sort of coming in into this critical point of decision making. One thing I can say is that we have a real deficit in workforce in the healthcare industry. We need folks. We need folks to get into the field. And so back to the point of affordability, there are, again, some economic pressures around unemployment, but there are lots of jobs available in the healthcare industry if we could reskill and get people to consider maybe a career change. So I think there's some community level things that we can do to help address people's perception of affordability and providing those pathways for them to actually have some solutions that they can then, you know, apply in their own families.
So what you're saying is I hear Cynthia saying it's the inflow in terms of income, being right. able to produce more income. Yeah, I suspect you could go on the Carilion website and find page after page of jobs that are available for qualified people. And the question is, how do we get enough qualified people to be able to fill those jobs?
And Joyce? I think Cynthia makes an excellent point. You know, if you combine that with, you know, it's been called lots of things, but the gray tsunami of retirees. I mean, hardly any company. I think healthcare has hit.
I'm looking much around
harder.
The room and the water's coming up in here.
Exactly. And what you see is that pretty much every company, organization, even local, even government, you know, it is hard pressed to get the staffing, you know, level that they need. And, you know, how does that play into affordability of all these other, you know, situations that we're talking about right now?
Jay.
Well, with that, actually, from economic perspective, that leads to another problem, which is inflation. And when you can't get people to fill these jobs, you have a demand and you can't meet it, the prices are going to go up. There's a lot of drivers for inflation. And so that just compounds the affordability problem. And so again, back to, I think the main point of this discussion is to trust Donald Trump and the federal government when someone says it's a hoax, to get back to the question is, what are we talking about here? You know, can we quantify the problem and say, is this a problem or is it not a problem?
Yeah, it's hard to solve. In my experience has been, Jay, I don't know if you would agree, it's hard to solve a problem if you don't acknowledge a problem. Mm-hmm. But the problem is super complex. And so, I like Cynthia was talking about, during COVID, people couldn't work. And the federal government opened up the coffers and pumped lots of money into the economy.
They did.
And then after COVID was slowing down, and there's a political debate about whether the second stimulus package was necessary, but it was passed. That's more money coming out. And so the more money you put in the economy, it's going to obviously increase prices. And to your point, as we get back on our feet with COVID and people are entering the workforce at different rates and at different time frames, the price of labor goes up.
Yes.
So now you've got consumer prices going up and the price of labor goes up. And what you're concerned about is a wage price spiral. I think what the president is trying to say, not that I would ever speak for Donald Trump, is that we've avoided the wage price spiral. In other words, we've got a problem, but that it's not systemic, it looks like now. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But
I'd like to have that optimism.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Based on the data we have currently, that the storm is on the horizon and mm-hmm. it doesn't look like the skies are going to clear. So I think that's what this comes back to is there a problem and what are we doing to try to address it?
Right. And what can we do? And one of the things that we've talked about as our group is how do we translate these sort of national issues into local response? And what can we as a collective community do to deal with prices?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very difficult problem. Nothing's coming to my mind right away that we could do. Joyce?
Well, I do think that in the situation of healthcare and staffing, there are some excellent programs for training people, and that's not the only area. You know, healthcare is not alone in that. There are some for construction and other things, but that takes time. And so, while you know we may be addressing it as a region, it's a pretty darn steep curve.
Right, Dana.
So, Joyce, what I hear you saying is, and I was thinking about this, thinking about the people who are listening to this broadcast. What are they thinking about the stuff that we're saying here today mm-hmm. when they can't pay the rent today?
Right.
And what in the world do we do, can be done, in the most immediate situation?
Right.
Right. So, that's a very good point. I mean, you know, and one of the things we've talked about as a group is, you know, we have a certain socioeconomic status amongst ourselves. And how is it that people are dealing with sort of the paycheck to paycheck kind of situation where one unexpected expense can put you to where you've got to make some of the tough decisions that Catherine was talking about? Wayne?
I think it's scary to think about 70% of the people in this country live paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. And so if you have any kind of perturbation on the economic landscape, that really becomes a problem. And it's like they don't even have $1,000 set aside for to fix it, something, to get an appliance or to fix a car. Yeah, that's a real problem.
You know, one of the things that we've talked about is the market on Melrose, and that is up and running. And I think there was a story recently about that. And I don't know what role that may have in terms of prices. You know, the margin in the grocery business, my understanding, is very, very tight. And so I don't know, you know, if your wholesale cost is X, you can't charge less than X and stay in business very long. So, but I don't know whether or not that's had any impact or not. Hopefully it has.
Well, I will say, this is Cynthia again, that Carilion has a relationship with the Excel Center there at Melrose Plaza, which is the adult education, the adult high school. And so we are right there in partnership with them to open the door to employment for those individuals. And so we're doing all that we can to meet individuals where they are as a corporation, to meet individuals where they are, to give them some resources that would help address the issue on a family by family basis. So we're doing what we can.
What if we switch gears a little bit? We've talked a lot about retail prices and groceries. What about housing costs? And how does, and that is something that local policy can have a lot to do with. Everything from building codes and regulations to zoning to things like that. I'll throw that out there and see if anybody wants to take the bite. Joyce?
Well, I don't know broadly about housing prices, but I will say anecdotally, I have seen, even in my neighborhood, there are hardly ever any homes that go on the market that aren't just quickly sold. And that has changed. And if my guess is that it has to do with sort of the uncertainty of, like you were saying, Jay, the economy and which direction things may go, and inflation, as was mentioned. Now, there are a lot of factors. And I just think that that is a sign, if you will, of some of the situation, and people are reluctant to take that kind of leap.
Has anybody else noticed that there's been a lot of corporate buying of houses in low-income neighborhoods?
Yes.
And I don't know the extent of it. I've noticed it in some of the transactions. In fact, the transactions used to be put in the Roanoke Times.
Yes.
MKB Realtors sponsored. It's a shout out to MKB. Re-sponsor that. That was cool. But I don't know if that's having an effect. You know, it's a supply-demand thing maybe. I don't know.
Well, so I just have a question. Why do you think that is?
No, is it related to REITs? I mean, real estate investment type? Now that you can do transactions and trade, I guess, real estate, what do you call that? REITs?
Yeah, a real estate investment trust. Uh-huh. It could be. That's a form of ownership that can sort of corporatize some of those assets. But also, you know, young people are not able to buy a house right now. Mm-hmm. And so they're stuck renting. And one of the traditional ways that you obtained independence and wealth in America was you bought a house and your housing prices value went up and you built equity over time in that. So if that's broken, that is a real problem. Jay?
So this reminds me, going back to the beginning of the conversation, this is a complicated problem. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to get lost with all these different moving parts. And all these things tend to reinforce each other. So if your housing costs are going up, you have less money per month to spend on food, right? If inflation rates are going up, then you have less buying power with that money. So to me, one of the things that we get challenged with the Roanoke Collaboration Project is having conversations that lead to some specific outcome because it can go in so many directions. So to circle this back to the title, you know, our governor is talking about working with the President of the United States on affordability. And I just, you know, how do we clearly define that problem so it becomes so clear that is that a reasonable expectation?
Right, and make a decision. You know, I don't know what the government can do You know, we don't want to have it without that. So, Dana?
I think it comes back to a word that, William, I think you used early on, and that's trust. So one of the things we've talked about in our group is that we need to demand better from our leaders. And so our leaders on both sides of the aisle have too often resorted to demagoguery, to setting one group up against another. And so the power flips back and forth from one party to another, and not much progress gets made. And so if companies, going back to the corporations, are going to have to invest their money, they kind of want to be able to predict what's going to happen. So one of the things that I think citizens can do is to demand better from their leaders in terms of how they express themselves. It's fine for them to have different ideas, fine for them to predict different ways people are going to respond to this policy or that policy, but they need to be responsible in how they speak.
I think that's a very good point, Dana. And one of the things we've talked about is if we can agree on the problem, we can agree on solutions. And one of the things about trust is that very thing. I mean, Republicans don't want prices to go up. Democrats don't want prices to go up. That's not a political thing. Now, how you fix that problem is where you will have some disagreement. But if you believe that people understand the problem and are coming from a place of goodwill, it's easier to reach a solution. Yes, Catherine.
One of the things I think also that we have to remember is that all of us as citizens supposedly have the right to vote for our leaders. And that's being challenged. So we've got to do something to fix that whole system. When you look at it, people are not as sure because there have been things that are thrown out there to try to keep people intimidated so they maybe won't go to the polls. But there are several new ways that we have within Virginia. You got 45 days prior to the election to get out. But this is what you need to do is be able to understand who your leaders are, see the pros and cons on both, and hopefully act as that citizen and take that right to vote and take it seriously, because that is your voice, sometimes the only one you have.
That's right. Sometimes they say, you know, if you don't vote, how do you complain?
Right.
Right. And so I don't know. Yes, Joyce.
Well, I would just add to that, you know, the trust factor is so important mm-hmm. because you want to know that your vote counts and that people are paying attention, as well as just knowing that you can do that without feeling any intimidation.
Right, right.
Just like Dana said, you have to hold our elected officials accountable. Mm-hmm. You can go on and talk about affordability and the cost, but if they say they're going to do something or want to do something, then they should be accountable for what they want to do.
Dana?
And so, for example, if someone were to hold a town hall and speak poorly, we don't have to fire them. We can just ask them to restate their position in a human way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to follow up, this is why this group got together, to talk about the behavior you model when you get into a public forum, mm-hmm. so that we can hear both sides.
Mm-hmm. William, Cynthia? You've been in a position of having to make some difficult decisions as a former legislator mm-hmm. and certainly a corporate leader. Talk to us about the process that goes through your mind and with your colleagues when you're working out a difficult, thorny issue.
Well, I don't want to sound Pollyannish about it, but you have to, my opinion is you have to approach it from a place of humility, that you don't really know the answer. You think you do. And when I hear about a problem and I think, well, this is the solution, I think, okay, well, that's what I think. And I think I'm right, but let's check. Let's get some input from different sides, which is what we're trying to do here. And maybe I don't have the whole solution, or maybe there's a tweak, you know, in the legislative process. You put a bill in that you think solves a problem, and then people come and they say, lobbyists or other members, and say, well, your solution is causing six more problems. And so you work together to try to minimize the fallout from what you're trying to do. And that's the way the process is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. I think to Dana's point, we're shutting each other down. I do think we need to hold politicians accountable, but I will also say this. We get the politicians exactly that we deserve, good and hard. The politicians, in my view, don't really lead. They follow. Mm-hmm. They respond to what works. And if something's working, it's because people are taking that bait. They're saying, okay, well, this sounds great. I don't need to. And in the media environment, we've got a situation where you can pick which side, and you don't have to listen to the other side, and that's a problem. All right, well, we need to wrap up, guys. I think that was a great discussion. And again, just for our listeners, this is the Roanoke Collaboration Project, and we were just offering our comment on the news and trying to model a way to discuss things civilly. So thanks for joining us. Please join us next week for our conversation about timely topics in the news that affect our valley.